The Guardian.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson on guardian.co.uk.
Day 19 of the World Cup. Passion, drama, excitement and Paraguay-Japan. Tuesday night saw another maravilla from the Spanish number 7 as Spain got one over on their neighbours. Meanwhile, Paraguay got through on pens after the game was stilted as those very, very tall men you get in the circus. Intense, too. So, with Japan out, leaving World Cup disorientated, the quarterfinal lineups are sorted. All of that in World Cup Daily. Hello there, world. Joining me today, Barry Glendinning and Greg Ruffley. What, again?
Yeah, afraid so.
Greg, lovely to see you again.
Thanks.
Have you had a nice intervening 24 hours?
Oh, brilliant. Amazing, yeah.
Has it been good?
I slept at least 4 hours last night.
Did you?
Yeah.
All right, then I'm Barry Glendinning. You're looking fresh.
I've had a haircut.
You certainly have.
An 8-pound haircut from a Cypriot barber in Brixton.
Right.
It'll be nice when it's finished.
Oh, now, the big game, of course, today, Tuesday in the World Cup, day 19 of the tournament, was Spain against Portugal. Sid Lowe.
Yes, I'm on the line, James. How are you?
I am very well. Sid, where did you watch it?
I watched it in two different places. I was watching it with some people from Marca for the first half, and then dashed home to catch the second half.
Well, you slipped your marker for the second half then.
Very good,
as
right.
David Villa did, of course, that's nice. What did the people from Marca make of it all?
Well, half time, which is when I bade farewell and dashed off, they were a little frustrated with it. They felt that it was a little bit stodgy, that they weren't really finding a way through. There was particular criticism for Xavi Alonso, which, given the way he played in the second half, obviously I thought was a little strange because he certainly improved. But at half time, I suppose they had a point. They were concerned as well about Fernando Torres because, again, he looked sluggish and a little bit slow and a little bit ponderous. But I'm sure, although I haven't spoken to any of them since the final whistle, I'm sure they'll be pretty happy with it now.
Mm. Well, I had a quick look on their website, and they basically said, I don't know how you would translate it, but lanzadas are launched towards the cup, I think.
Exactly, yeah. It means exactly right, as if to say we're on the way now. We've got liftoff. I suppose the best version of an English version of that headline would be we have liftoff or something like that.
Right, okay, except that you'd never get an English version of that, would you? Lift off for the cup.
Well, you might after we'd won the first group game against someone rubbish. Oh, right. We're going to win the World Cup.
Yeah, indeed. If Torres is the Spanish Heskey, as you were cheekily positing in your article in The Guardian today, does that make your Andy Crouchy?
Doesn't it just? He came on and made quite a difference, although he did miss that very first shot. I think what it does do, actually, and I'm going to defend myself here, furiously backpedaling and trying to get myself out of trouble, I think it does show that Vicente Del Bosque, as I was trying to point him out in that piece, because of course we all know that Torres is a million times better than Heskey, that it does show that Del Bosque feels the need to have someone with presence, feels the need to have Villa coming into the attack from a slightly kind of less well-marked position. And the goal came from that kind of inside left position for David Villa. But I thought Llorente had a good game when he came on.
Yeah, okay. Fellows?
Well, I thought Llorente was very impressive. Do you think there's a chance he'll start their next game instead of Torres? Because surely a fully fit Llorente is better than a sluggish and slow and obviously out of sorts Torres.
Yeah, I think there would, under normal circumstances, be a chance for that. But I think there's a couple of things that mitigate against it. One is that while we saw a pretty good Llorente tonight, Torres is quicker. And although he does still look sluggish and not fully fit, Torres is quicker, which I think Del Bosque particularly values. I also think Del Bosque, if you look at the way that he coaches, for the most part, is a relatively conservative coach and doesn't tend to go in for big gestures. Although when he was Real Madrid coach, there was a couple of times when he did slightly strange tactical things that worked for the most part. So I would expect Torres to start in the next game despite the performance tonight.
Will they not look for more width, given that they're going to be playing against Paraguay, who've got a really good defence as well? I think they only conceded one goal, and that was a fluke against Italy. So I'm sure it would be a bit of a risk to go out there with the same narrow team on it and maybe not get the one goal that they got tonight.
Well, that's the thing that Del Bosque has been obsessed with, and actually one of the things that's earned him some criticism, because he's the very fact that Navas is in the squad, the fact that Llorente is in there, because I must admit, when he first put Llorente on tonight, I thought, right, this is a prelude to Navas coming on at some stage. So you've got Navas on the wing, putting the ball into the box, and Llorente there to head it home. Of course, it didn't happen. Partly, it perhaps didn't happen because Spain then got the breakthrough within, 5 or 6 minutes of Llorente coming on the pitch, maybe not even that. So that's certainly an option. And as I say, Del Bosque is the guy that's been trying to give Spain width, which is something they didn't have at the European Championships, to try and give them that extra option. Still, the first choice for him is to play, broadly speaking, the way that they played tonight. So I think we probably won't see Witts at the start of the game against Paraguay, but I think that option will become more and more significant as the game goes on. And I think it probably would have happened tonight if Spain hadn't got the first goal. As soon as Spain got the first goal tonight, in fact, I would extend that and say as soon as Spain get the first goal in any game, they look very, very comfortable indeed. Because again, and I've said this before, but the notion of tiki-taka is the perfect way to unlock a defence. Yes, it did do tonight. I actually think its greatest strength is it's a perfect defensive system for Spain, because the other team can't get anywhere near the ball. Portugal were supposed to react, and they couldn't react because they couldn't get anywhere near the football.
Well, that was one of the reasons. They just seemed to have one or two issues about what they were supposed to do next when they went a goal down. You mentioned Navas, Sid. How is he coping with being so many, 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 many miles away from home?
I've got a theory, you know. I think they've done a bit of a B.A. Baracus on him. I think they've drugged his milk, put him on a plane, and now they're pretending this is actually Seville. I think he probably walked into the hotel and they've got kind of Sevillano things all over the place, and Sergio Ramos is playing in flamenco music all the time. Because it's extraordinary. There's been no mention whatsoever of him struggling in any way. There's been no talk at all of him being remotely unhappy. And you know, that's really says quite a lot, actually, to be fair as well, to the Spanish Federation, the way they've handled him, in particular to the way that Fernando Hierro, the director of sport for the Spanish Federation, Vicente del Bosque, obviously the coach, and in particular amongst the players, Sergio Ramos, have helped to try and make him feel comfortable. And it's I wouldn't say it was a surprise, because I suppose we didn't expect him to pack his bags and bugger off halfway through the tournament. But it is impressive how well he's coped with this situation so far.
It's funny, because we've done the same thing with Sean Inglis. We got him in a basement in King's Cross, which we've told him is actually South Africa, giving him a very
it
dodgy internet connection.
It wouldn't be the first time Sean had been in a dodgy basement in King's Cross.
I think it would, Sid. But anyway, yes.
Sean right. thinks there's a shop near Guardian Towers called the Pirate Bookshop, and Sean actually thinks it sells books about pirates. That's how naive he is.
I wish it did. That would be great.
Has he been in there a few times with a parrot on his shoulder? That's a very specialist market.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of market it caters to, actually, but... Anyway, listen, Sid, that's fantastic then. So a good night for Spain. There was some marker actually calling it their best game yet in South Africa, which I was a little bit surprised by. I thought that...
I agree with you, James, but you have to bear in mind something, and that is the way the game ended. And it's really difficult to kind of express just how much some sections of the Spanish media are obsessed by this passing and keeping the ball side of the Spanish game. So watching that last 20 minutes and watching them just basically kill Portugal softly and just kind of move the ball around and more or less take the mickey out of them, that's the image they've been left with. I think that's why they think this is such a good performance. Add to that the fact that they believe, obviously, that Portugal are a far better side than any of the other teams in the tournament. It's an argument I would disagree with. I don't think Portugal are very good at all. I think the career game completely flattered them. And I think we've seen... I would argue, yet another poor performance from Ronaldo.
Yeah, well, indeed. Anyway, buenas noches, Sid, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
World Cup Daily from The Guardian with James Richardson.
Right, there you go. Well, so Carlos Queiroz is going to be even more popular in Portugal now.
Was he already...
Very unpopular, yeah. Mm. Yeah, and I don't think he covered himself in glory, do you think, Barry?
No, I mean... Portugal were very well organised in defence. They defended brilliantly in the numbers tonight. They could have scored a couple of goals.
They had some good chances, didn't they, in the first half?
But when they were going forward, they didn't seem to have many ideas of what to do next. And for the last half hour of the game, or the entire second half, actually, Cristiano Ronaldo was isolated up front. There was no one to give him the ball. He couldn't come deep and get it himself. So it's sort of unfair to criticise him for his performance, because there's really very little he
but
can
fun.
Do. Oh, absolutely fun, yes.
It's classic example of a team being knackered when they do get the ball as well, because they've just been chasing it around for long periods of the game. And as soon as they get it, and they're probably just breathing heavily, look forward and just hope that Ronaldo will get hold of it and do something special, you know.
Oh, yeah. We should also mention the Cap de Villa business with Ricardo Costa being sent off, which initially looked like Cap de Villa had basically taken a dive to get an opposition player sent off. But the replay that we saw after the final whistle clearly shows that Costa went in with his elbow on Cap de Villa's face. Whether he made a lot of contact, I don't know. But he certainly was going in with the intent to give Cap de Villa a whack on the side of the face. So our initial outrage at Cap de Villa's antics was perhaps tempered by a video replay. Topically enough.
I would... go so far as to say that FIFA appear to have embraced modern technology by having a word in the ears of the South African TV people and saying anything contentious, just don't show any replays. And that way, if we just ignore things, they might go away. There was talk Villa's goal was offside. I don't know, was it?
His right leg was onside, so I think that's fair enough.
His left leg, with which he scored the goal, was offside, though.
Yeah,
I mean, it was very, very close. It was about as close as the Italy equaliser, which would have kept them in the cup, was offside.
And he's supposed to go with the attacker in that particular situation. Yeah, so the linesman,
in Italy's case, grumble, grumble, moan, moan. Sean Ingle is busy having dinner. We're trying to time a conversation with him in between the main course and the pudding. Or he may now, even as we speak, be on to coffee and mint chocolate.
Sean,
I'm not
Sean Ingle
sure.
Doesn't
he
touch
doesn't
pudding.
Drink or coffee or eat chocolate.
Oh, right.
Anything.
Guaraná,
he's a vegan. He probably just...
He'll have munga beans and that'll be it. Maybe three
really?
Munga beans, yeah, and then he'll do 10
big
pretzels.
Bowl of lentils for dessert.
Really? Do they do that kind of thing much in South Africa? I've never been, you see.
Me neither.
All right, okay. Producer Ben, who has, on an ill-fated mountain biking tour, which, to his very great surprise, actually featured mountains... Imagine his shock. Anyway, he suggests that they don't. But anyway, let's get it from, well, I was going to say the horse's mouth, but that would be unfair.
Hello.
Sean Ingle. Hi, Sean.
Jimbo.
Hello. You sound, well, as
I'm
Marcella would say.
I'm walking back to my apartment now.
Are you? What,
on the busy rain Ravona Road.
Are you walking on the streets of Johannesburg?
I am walking now. I've got Richard Williams, Tom Jenkins and Owen Gibson.
So I Richard Williams has got your back. To, that's a relief.
If I'm challenged, I can...
Talk about
four of us, so no way thinking Johannesburgian would dare take us on, would they?
No way.
I suppose if you can look after yourself in the mean streets of Luton, you'll be all right in Johannesburg.
Sean, what was on the menu? What was on the menu at your restaurant tonight?
It was Italian, so I just had some gnocchi.
You've earned it because you were our reporter there at that Paraguay-Japan game this afternoon.
Yeah, it wasn't a classic. It started off fairly brightly. Japan had a couple of sort of long range shots in the first 2 or 3 minutes. They hit the bar after 20. Then Rocky sent the crews missing chance in the half hour. But then from then on, really, for the next 90 minutes, pretty much nothing happened.
Mm.
And it was one of the worst games of the tournament. It wasn't quite as bad as Algeria v Slovenia, which I was also at. But it was pretty dire. I don't know if it's true or not, but there was a journalist next to me that... at half time, had a perfectly good seat, just basically left, didn't come back. The other thing that was quite interesting was that the second time in a row in the Pretoria Stadium, I was given a seat that didn't exist. Last time for the game last Friday, I had a seat number 13, and the row went from 12 to 14. This afternoon I didn't have a seat, and luckily a piece of Fisher took me out. But next to me, there was a guy who had a C13, and next to him had exactly the same ticket, C13. And half an hour in, another guy came along, big tough guy, and said, "Just sitting in my seat." And all sorts of altercations, you know, pushing and shoving and pointing, until again the feet official came and had to sort it out. So it was pretty rubbish on their part.
Well, at least it gave you something to entertain yourself while the game was going on. Sean, have you been to any good games while you've been out there?
I've had loads of good games. I mean, I had Cameroon Denmark was a good game. I saw the USA against Slovenia, the two all stirring draw. And I've been to Argentina 3 out of 4 games, which I've enjoyed. And I've seen Brazil a couple of times. I'm actually quite lucky. I've had a couple of stinkers, but you expect that in any World Cup.
All right. And what are you going to be doing in the quarterfinals? Where are you going?
Oh, I've got a humdinger to start off with. I've got Uruguay v Ghana.
Ah.
And then I'm back to see Paraguay against Spain.
All right. And what are you going to do on your 2 days off, Sean?
Well, I won't get days off. I'll be live blogging on the website. And I've already had an email from my bosses saying, I'd be expected to go to press conferences and my piece as well. So I'll have had one day off during this trip. But you sort of get used to it in a way. And on my day off, I went to the Apartheid Museum in Johannesburg, which was fascinating, and also had a small little exhibition of South African football magazines or South African soccer from the early 1980s, and it was talking about hooligans, and it was talking about the players being arrogant, all the things that we think about today or what perhaps was going on in the 80s in England was also going on in South Africa. So I found that quite interesting, but then maybe I'm a really rather boring nerd.
Ben, can you just edit that laughing out and then we'll say no. Sean, that's magnificent. Sean Ingle, everybody. Good, good, good. Re-Paraguay, after that match Tuesday afternoon, and Slovakia's performance, how bad does that make Italy, who couldn't beat either of them?
Pretty bad.
Pretty bad.
Paraguay probably deserved to win that game. At least they tried to win it in normal time, whereas Japan didn't.
Hmm.
So I think on the balance of play, the right team went through the quarterfinals.
Yeah, I think they were trying to feel each other out for the first 20, 25 minutes. In the second half, I thought it wasn't quite as bad as what Sean said. There was like 10-minute spells of attacking on each side. Japan would go up one end and they'd seem to have all the pressure, and then they'd kind of get a bit tired. Then they'd go back the other end and Paraguay would have the ball for a while. But it's just that there wasn't particularly too many shots on goal at the end of this spells of 10 minutes attacking, you know.
Yeah, which is always nice to see, isn't it? Barry had a go at poor old Jonathan Wilson, suggesting that he was getting all hot and bothered about the lack of net bulging activity. And Jonathan then posted in, I saw, he said, actually, I thought the Japan versus Paraguay game was rubbish, he protests. When I say goals are overrated, it doesn't necessarily follow that every nil-nil is exquisite. Paraguay had one idea, let Morel cross it, but that was one more than Japan. Because of that, they deserved to win. And it wasn't as bad as Ukraine versus Switzerland 4 years ago, but it was dire, says podcasting's Jonathan Wilson. We've had lots of posts actually about Japan too, not so much on a footballing thing, but you recall the top French football expert Philippe Auclair was on a week or two ago talking about the way that the French team and their downfall has been a little bit hijacked by people for political ends, you know, talking about, well, from the right, from the kind of nationalist end of the political spectrum, talking about how a multi-ethnic team doesn't work, etc., this kind of thing. Do you remember that, Ben? No. Anyway, Sniffer 8 says, Japan played wonderfully against Denmark, but I wonder how many people are aware of the undercurrents of nationalism and xenophobia surrounding this team in the Japanese media and among a significant section of the population, with national team success being emblematic of a racially pure nation, Tulio notwithstanding, succeeding against perfidious foreigners. Now, other people have posted in to suggest that, yes, this is the case. GG84 says, I love people lecturing the world about how it goes down in the Japanese media despite not having read any opinion pieces whatsoever in Japanese. It's curious, isn't it? The way, you know, we watch these football teams play and we think that's the end of it. But the way that this stuff gets spun and twisted or used to other ends in different countries around the world, extraordinary.
I don't know anything about that regarding the Japan team, but I did hear that on the Fox network in the States, some presenter was complaining about the USA team, saying that, you know, every single one of them was an immigrant and none of them had actually been born in America. But upon closer examination, all but two, I think, were born in the States, and he was just talking through his hat.
So then they made a full correction.
Oh, of course, yeah. Bill O'Reilly probably came on and issued a grovelling apology. But that's the kind of thing, it's dangerous, you know, because people will believe that, but you can say it unchecked and... And, you know, even if they were immigrants, so what?
Well, indeed. Indeed. I don't know what the situation is in Japan. It's a very interesting little window into how that their particular national kind of...
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know whether there's any rules applied that prevent players who aren't of Japanese heritage, you know, from the grandparents.
They got Tulio in there, and they had Alex at... which World Cup was that? Was that last time around or 2002? 2002, I think, no? They've had foreign managers as well. So it does seem strange. GG84 was saying, in fact, yeah, most of the Japanese are just pretty much over the moon, given the fact they were so rubbish leading up to the World Cup. Anyway, off they've gone home now. A couple of other big talking points. Goal line technology, of course. Gandhi says, apologies if this has already been asked, but I'd like to canvass opinion among England fans if they'd swap Lampard's goal for the 66 World Cup win.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you lose 66 and you...
If you want Lampard's goal, you have to...
Well, they get knocked out in the next round, wouldn't they? So.
Yeah. Yeah, probably keep not. 66, yeah. Birahu says, I think football without Jeff Hurst's ghost goal in 66, Maradona's hand of God, or even Thierry Henry in Paris is much less interesting and fun. Wouldn't video technology remove a big piece of football culture? This is your thinking, isn't it, Barry?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's go, juniors. Argentina's Sergio Romero offers his thoughts on goal line technology. Football is for people who play with cunning, so to put technology like a chip in the ball to see if it went in, I think you take away the cunning and then football ends for the great players. It's an Argentine viewpoint, isn't it?
Isn't the case that they've actually tested this out?
And the ship?
The ship. They've tested this technology out and the ball, it was inconsistent and... they thought the ball had gone over the line and it hadn't. So even with a chip in the ball, I mean, if the chip moves around inside the ball, where do you...
Well, yeah, I think that there are various kind of issues about where you chip, position the chip, and people who are self-proclaimed nerds say that it is quite possible to do. Personally, you were mentioning before, Barry, that Sepp Blatter came out with this statement today. It is obvious that after the experience so far in this World Cup, it would be a nonsense to not reopen the file of technology. So much of a nonsense that until yesterday he was saying there's absolutely no way it was going to happen. But what he's been talking about is goal line technology, not video reviewing. And the suspicion is, I guess, from lots of people that he's basically allowing goal line technology to be discussed because the technical problems will mean that we'll basically end up ruling it out once they've experimented
with
it. Whereas I just want them to be able to use the video that the fourth official can have.
Yeah, and don't you find it's just ridiculous that they've allowed the screens to be in the ground to show these incidents which are causing...
Well, they're not supposed to show the incidents, that's the thing.
Oh, right, so that's just... Okay.
It was just somebody accidentally pressed that, allowed that replay to go out, not realising how contentious it would have been, Barry.
Well, Scott Murray made the point to me today that we were slaving over the comedy classic that is the clogger section of the Guardian newspaper, and Scott Murray said that if Lampard had hit his shot a little harder and possibly got it more on target, then there's a very modern technology, this stringy series of square-shaped boxes of air hanging from the goal frame.
Barry, his shot crossed the line and went into the goal. It is in no reasonable understanding of the word his fault that it didn't go in a way that was visible to the linesman, who should have seen it. Everybody else saw it. Yes, he could.
Why leave the margin for error? Keep the shot down. Get it in the back of the net.
You're just trolling.
If it had hit it harder, it would have gone over, wouldn't it? Surely.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, keep your head down over the ball.
What are you talking about
He's
now?
He's a fully trained professional footballer.
And he hit a goal. He hit a goal. And he hit the ball into the net.
Kick the goal, mate.
He hit the ball into the net, and there's no way that even you could possibly be serious with what you're saying. Good. Well, after 19 days, the first break in the World Cup schedule is upon us, Wednesday and Thursday. No pod then tomorrow. Producer Ben has axed my preview of the rest days. Lovingly prepared. So instead...
I'm still bewildered as how you were going to
preview the rest days.
Nothing.
Well, I think we've had ample experience of that on this pod. But anyway, instead, let's take stock of events so far, shall we? Listeners, you can play this game at home. What have been your favourite memories? Who do you think have been the big flops on the field, please, of World Cup 2010, FIFA South Africa, etc.? Worst haircuts, all that kind of thing? Worst haircuts is a no-brainer, isn't it? Jedward of Slovakia.
Oh, the guy with
Hamzic,
the...
Hamzic, yeah.
Yeah.
That's indefensible. I don't know, best moments, Craig, have you...
Best moments, probably, well, I mean, the opening day when Shabalala, named Shabalala.
Yeah,
exactly. He scored South Africa's opening goal. And it was nice that it was a South African who scored the opening goal of the tournament as well. And that nice little dance they did afterwards, you know, which wouldn't have been out of place on a dance floor.
No, absolutely not. And Barry?
There's a certain sort of theme to find. Frank Lampard's goal being disallowed, England crashing out, Fabio Capello showing John Terry the pimp hand the day after his failed insurrection, and young Taisei's bursting into floods of tears during the North Korean national anthem, even though he apparently never visits North Korea and lives in Japan and drives a Hummer and listens to the music of Tupac Shakur.
Mm-hmm.
All behaviour which I'm sure his glorious leader would frown upon. And Mick Jagger and Bill Clinton being old Buddy Woody.
Mm-hmm.
Edgar Davids as well. He's been a star for me. Edgar Davids, the way he's refused to go along with Adrian Charles, every man's stick, you know, and he's kind of just sat there with his arms crossed and said something contrary every time he's been asked a question.
Yeah.
And then
why would you get somebody like that on a programme? I don't understand it. Barry?
But he was asked today at halftime in the Japan-Korea, who do you think will win? And he refused to venture an opinion. Like he would. I don't want to say.
It's funny because he's always been that way. So why would you hire him? Why would you hire him?
Well, you know how the game works. Why do you think...
Well, I've never booked guests and stuff. But yeah, usually it's because you know that they're reliable and they'll fill up a certain amount of airtime.
Okay, I'm going to go out on a limb here. Yeah. Is there an element of tokenism to
No,
it?
Definitely. I mean, no question about that.
Right.
Yeah. But also because...
Surely if they want...
No, one thing about him is he's Dutch, which means that A, you usually think they're going to be good talkers. B, they're going to be good talkers in English. And C, they're not one of the usual faces. It's the World Cup, so you don't want the usual match of the day crowd, unless you're the BBC, in which case you do. But so they get in, they like to get the Dutch players or a Jurgen Klinsmann or something, but just obviously nobody had ever spoken to Edgar Davids before he turned up in Cape Town.
I've got a theory on this.
Yeah.
In Hollywood, generally, you get a load of movie producers around the table, and they've got this one idea, and then they branch off into they go two separate ways, and you'll usually have films of the same subject matter coming out at the same time. One's dreadful and one's brilliant.
And one's the porn version, that's three versions.
Yeah, I don't usually see those ones. You'll have to let me know where you go.
Sean Ingalls' Pirate Bookshop.
Yeah, the Pirate Bookshop, yeah. So in this situation, I think the BBC...
Long John Silver.
I think the BBC have gone in and got the good Dutchman, and the ITV have got the bad Dutchman. Although, conversely, he is the good Dutchman. And I don't know what happened to the pornographic Dutchman.
Surely they audition him before giving him a big contract.
I think if you're Edgar Davids, somebody who says, you know, can you come in for a little bit of a test, you know, like a screen test or something, I don't think they would say that to him. And certainly on any of the shows on a much lower level that I've been on, we've never kind of tested out guests before. You kind of just hit and hope. But usually they're people who've worked in the industry before, so you have some idea of how it's going to work out.
But why wouldn't you test them?
Because they're big, famous people, and they would react angrily probably to the idea that they were going to have to justify their presence. That, you know, he is Edgar Davids, so of course you want me.
Right.
I think that would be my guess. But, you know, after Adrian Charles is doing his best. Of course, Paul Doyle thinks that Edgar Davids is, without irony, the standout pundit of the World Cup so far.
Really? Does Doyle really think that? Davids is really good?
Yeah, he loves him. He raves about him.
But he thinks people should get up, like 40,000 fans should just get up in the middle of a match and walk out, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. Well, is that it for our best of... There's been 3 weeks' worth of World Cup. How about biggest flops so far?
As predicted pre-tournament, Wayne Rooney's been terrible.
Mm.
I think he's been the biggest flop, without doubt.
Do you?
Yeah, Wayne Rooney. With all the hype going into it.
Yeah.
I mean, he was so bad. And Torres has done a good impression of an Englishman as well. Mm. I think maybe he's been in England too long and he's acquired the terrible touch and the can't pass a ball 10 yards.
Do you think there is a Premier League element to this, the fact that something to do with the way the football's played over here? This is going to get into a really dry discussion, but a lot of people say, you know, players from the Premier League aren't shining.
I think that's a problem. Whilst the Premier League's king, and it still is, the league, whilst everybody wants to come and there's so much money in the league, I think there'll always be this element that players have to put so much energy into that when they go away with the national team, they're taking injuries away. And also, I think they're taking the mentality away as well of the Premier League. Maybe thinking, going into a tournament, thinking, well, I play in the best league in the world, and they turn up and they find out that other players are better organised, and actually they've got a better touch than them. And it's all a bit... There's still an element of the Premier League that's just too fast. You know, it's a very fast league, and there's not as much emphasis put on finding space and creating chances.
Right. Italy, the biggest flops of all, though, surely. I mean, as you were saying, Greg, about England the other day, at least France weren't trying. But Italy, even worse than England, surely. They didn't even make it to the last 16. They didn't even manage a single victory. They still
passed the ball better than England, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
I think the zenith for Italy was when New Zealand brought on the bank clerk.
Yes.
To give him a couple of minutes towards the end of the game.
Slovakia turned up against Italy as well.
Mm. All right. Player of the tournament so far, apart from the usual big names, has been an unexpected delight. I mean, Shinsuke Honda, everyone was...
He's been superb. Fia has been superb.
Mesut Ozil, for me.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, he's only 21 as well.
Yeah.
And in fact, a lot of the best players of the tournament they've come from teams you wouldn't necessarily expect. Luis Fabiano, Sevilla, Mesut Ozil, Werder Bremen, and Carlos Tevez, Manchester City.
Yeah. No, he has been brilliant.
I think Tevez
has
been really good. He's been better than Messi so far, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Top goal?
David Villa's long-range effort, from me,
Really? You'd like that more than the one where he skips past a couple of defenders and while falling down hooks it back up into the top corner?
Yeah, I prefer the long range.
What about the Suarez against South Korea, that lovely curling shot? That was a terrific goal.
I love Italy's goal. Italy's goal.
Like Quagliarella?
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
Oh, that's the best goal of this tournament so far.
So bittersweet, wasn't it?
Yeah, but yeah, that was the best piece of skill I've seen this tournament.
Luis Fabiano, the one against Chile the other night? Bursa, that was
a
good goal.
I like Luis Fabiano's one with the double handball.
Yeah, that was good.
It was still
as well.
A good goal.
The double juggle.
Yeah.
All right. Terrific. But, you know, after all the naysayers and the doom and gloom in the early rounds, it has been thoroughly enjoyable for the most part. I mean, the action dried up a little bit today, but it's been a good tournament. As Paul Doyle says, another Paul Doyleism, it's the World Cup, so even when it's bad, it's good.
No. Because Paraguay and Japan was not by any stretch of the imagination good.
All right then.
But well, anyway. Scott Murray did the minute by minute for that. And we have these little rooms in the office called Think Pods. Ooh. It's a very Garagin thing, obviously. But if you require silence and privacy, or you don't want Sean Ingle to come over and babble in your ear while you're trying to do something, you can lock yourself away in one of these rooms. But Scotty came out, decided to lock himself away in one of those for a bit of peace while he was doing the minute by minute, and he came out. He just had this haunted look of horror in his eyes, like, and he's a pretty morose dude at the best of times, but his will to live had really been sapped.
I think that's his default face, isn't it? A haunted look of horror. Not sure why, but he's obviously seen something that the rest of us hadn't yet.
He's been in the pirate bookshop, I think.
He probably has. R. Why couldn't the 12-year-old go to the pirate movie?
I don't know.
It was rated R.
Hey.
There are 8 quarterfinalists. We know who they are now. 4 of them are South American. They are Holland, Brazil, Uruguay, Ghana, Germany, Argentina, Paraguay, Spain. The winner of Holland and Brazil will play the winner of Uruguay, Ghana. And the winner of Germany, Argentina will play the winner of Paraguay, Spain. And the winner of all of that is going to be who, Barry?
I've got Germany in the sweep.
Have you?
And I've money on them, and I'm cautiously optimistic. I think whoever wins the game between them and Argentina will win the tournament.
Because whoever wins the game between them and Argentina has to play probably Spain in the next.
Yeah.
And you're happy about that?
Yeah.
All right. Greg?
I think Spain will win it, but I'd like Germany to win it.
You would?
Yeah.
Because?
Because my mum was born in Germany.
All right, fair
no
enough.
Other reason than that, really.
All right. Listen, one final thing, actually, since you're on. Last reports from Merseyside have Roy Hodgson set to sign with Liverpool in the next, well, it was said 48 hours.
Looks that way, in the next 2 days it's going to happen, isn't it? Yeah.
What's your, as a, you know, season ticket holder of that club.
Really? Yeah, that's
yeah.
Me. Yeah.
What's your view on that?
I was just talking to producer Ben about this before you came in, actually, and I don't know why I've got this feeling of not being overwhelmed by the decision, but I do think he's probably the best man in this situation. Personally, I'd like to see Dalglish take the job temporarily and maybe see if we could sort out the ownership issue in the next few months, because I do think if Hodgson comes in and then the club's sold, he could find his, you know, could find his P45 coming through the front door pretty soon.
And are you likely to see a change of ownership that soon?
Well, supposedly in the next six months, or, you know, you'd like to think it's going to be in the next 6 months. That seems to be what people have been saying. And if the banks do get onto Hicks and Gillett and rein them in, then I'm sure they'd have to sell and reduce the value of the club. But I do think Hodgson's a good manager. He's got European experience. I think he'll be respected by the players, but I don't know whether he'll be able to keep the likes of Torres. I think Torres will be gone after the World Cup.
You think that your feeling of underwhelmedness will be shared by one or two key players?
I imagine so, yeah. I think a lot of the players might just be thinking, well, they're looking up above them, and if the ownership issue isn't sorted out, I just don't think they'll want to be at the club regardless of who the manager is in the short term. So, I don't know. I find it all a little bit underwhelming at the moment. Maybe I'll get into it a bit more when the World Cup's over. I've still got World Cup fever at the moment, you know.
Indeed so, indeed so. Well, no pod tomorrow, listeners, but we will be back on Thursday with a preview of Friday's quarterfinal action. So do make sure you join us for that. Enjoy your day off, as indeed will we. Although you guys aren't having one.
No, we won't.
No, okay. No, we're in here in about 10 hours.
No. All right, then. Well, anyway, thanks, Greg. Thanks, Barry. Thanks, producer Ben. Thank you, listeners. And we'll speak to you the day after tomorrow. Bye-bye.
great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.